Hello and welcome to the You and Numeric podcast. I'm Howard Hudson, and today we're joined by Katie Kushminder from our School of Governance. On March 13th, she presented to the Dutch government the first policy report for the IS Academy Migration Development Project, entitled The Role of the Diaspora in Knowledge Transfer and Capacity Building in Post-Conflict Settings, the Temporary Return of Qualified Nationals to Afghanistan. So, Katie, before we go into looking into the project, can you tell us a little bit more about the background and what is this IS Academy?
The IS Academy project is a five-year study that's funded by the Dutch Ministry of Foreign Affairs. And the objective of the project is to provide evidence-based policy recommendations based on research that can enhance the positive effects of migration and mitigate the negative effects. So primarily we work in five countries, which are Afghanistan, Burundi, Ethiopia, Morocco, and in the Netherlands with migrants from those four groups.
Okay, so what exactly is temporary return? And what are the participants' backgrounds and what jobs they do when they come back home? Can you spell that out for us?
So temporary return has gained a lot of popularity in the policy arena over the last 10 years. It's also often referred to as circular migration, reverse circular migration, or a brain gain initiative. And temporary return is essentially someone who lives in a country of migration, who returns temporarily to their country of origin for a period of 3 months to 12 months, and works on a project to contribute to knowledge transfer and capacity building in that country, and then they return to their home in the country of migration. So this project that we have done, this research, was done in partnership with the International Organization for Migration in The Hague, and we looked at this project that they have called the Temporary Return of Qualified Nationals to Afghanistan. So we looked at Dutch Afghans who went back to Afghanistan for a period of 3 to 6 months to contribute to knowledge transfer and capacity building. The participants in this project had essentially all come to the Netherlands as refugees between 1993 to 2000. They're all highly skilled, so most of them had a bachelor's or a master's, some even had a PhD degree.
And in what kind of fields?
In different fields. So there was engineers, doctors, some had specific degrees, masters of fine arts or masters in the Dari language. So quite a variety of fields. And this project really focused on three areas of impact in Afghanistan. So that was infrastructure, education, and health. So they tried to get people targeted to those three specific fields. And when they went back to Afghanistan, they, of course, did different jobs relating to the different fields. Typically, they worked in more senior roles as managers. They worked in universities a lot, doing lectures and also creating new curriculum. So they often they would bring new courses to Afghanistan that had not been taught there previously. And they also worked in areas, of course, as health, and the doctors would go back and work and try to teach the other doctors in Afghanistan new techniques.
The security challenges in Afghanistan are very well documented, but most of us know very little about the situation for training and employment. Can you briefly explain the context you've been working in then?
For us, we were in a fortunate situation. We stayed at the International Organization for Migration in Kabul, so they are under UN security, and they provided us with transport to and from the participants' offices to conduct interviews. In the event that a participant's office was not in an area deemed safe in Kabul, then that participant was invited to come to the IOM's office for an interview. So we were quite fortunate that the security situation for us was really quite well managed, and we had support in doing the work and implementing the interviews. While we were there on that stay, there was some days where there was White City and you were not allowed to leave the compound. Well, they call it White City, and it means that there's a security threat, so no one is allowed to enter or leave the compound. Mm-hmm. So then you're basically not able to do the interviews or the work for
days. But the participants you're working with there, going about their normal daily lives as any Afghan would.
Yes.
So they don't have the same security?
No. The participants, they do not have the same security. They are often in more stressful situations, and they will speak to you about, you know, how for their families in the Netherlands it's very stressful that they are going to Afghanistan and living in the security environment there.
Are they targeted at all for their work with international organizations?
I don't think so, no. I don't think that often people always realize that they're working with international organizations. I think they're more targeted because a lot of them do placements within the Afghan government, and that is a place where they're more likely to be targeted is working within the Afghan administration.
Okay. In your paper, you speak a lot about explicit and tacit knowledge, and Is this an important distinction in a country where rote learning, in other words, top-down repetition instead of bottom-up critical thinking, really seems to be the norm?
The distinction between explicit and tacit knowledge was important, and what we found is that tacit knowledge is much more important for the knowledge transfer and capacity building. And tacit knowledge can include things like teamwork, and that really reaches to the example of what you're talking about, where people, when they're used to working in an individual environment where you go top-down and you're told, you do this, you do this, you do this, they're not often thinking in a way to work together, to share ideas, to work as a team. So this is a big change that some of the participants are trying to implement in Afghanistan. And other examples of this is the participants are trying to teach them skills such as more problem solving. So if you can't get something done, instead of just saying I can't do it, thinking about how to problem solve and find a solution so that you can implement what you need to do for your work. So those are areas where I think that the tacit knowledge transfer was quite critical, and it helps them in terms of the bottom-up critical thinking.
And that's something new?
That is something new. I think that it's not typical that people are doing these things in a daily environment in Afghanistan. So by having someone that they can trust that speaks their language, that's coming in from a different cultural environment but can still fit with their cultural environment, they're really bringing new ideas. And participants also sought to bring new ideas in terms of democracy and promoting women's rights and promoting human rights. And participants also often really saw this as a part of their role. They would say things like, you know, I worked to tell them about human rights. So when you, particularly for people also who go outside of Kabul and who go to more of the provinces in Afghanistan, I think that this can have quite an effect when you have someone that you trust bringing in these new ideas.
And how many of these participants were women?
Of the participants I interviewed, one was a woman.
Out of how many?
Out of 19. And overall in the program, I think it was less than 10% women. The vast majority of participants are men.
Is that because in Afghanistan, when they were growing up, the opportunities for women to learn were so much less, or am I making
assumptions? It's very possible. I didn't ask particularly about that. One female participant who went on the program was a doctor, and she was older, in her 50s. And another female participant who went on the program was younger, so really came to the Netherlands as a teenager, and then had the opportunity to go through schooling in the Netherlands and then participate in the program going back. But the majority were male, and I think it's probably that they did have the educational opportunities at that time. And I think also it might also just be that women are not as inclined to return to Afghanistan. They know that the situation has deteriorated for women. They know that it's going to be more challenging for them. So that might also just not be what they want to do.
Okay. You highlight three examples of capacity building in your report. Can you briefly tell us about them and their long-term practical effects?
The first one is an example of a participant who went to the northern province in Afghanistan, Badakhshan, and he was requested by the city to come to work in that province. And when he arrived, he found that there was 4 computers in that province, and that they were not on, they were not being utilized. And he said, well, why don't we get them fixed and turn them on? So he fixed the computers and he turned them on, and this was the first time that people in that province had used computers. So these teachers were using the computers for the first time, and he trained them how to use the computers and how to use the internet, and then those teachers proceeded to train the students. So they trained over 1,500 students on how to type, how to use a computer. And one of the teachers that I spoke to regarding their experience said, you know, this was really a fantastic experience for me. It changed me 60%. I've really learned so much from the participant. And what I was also really surprised to find out was that those computers had actually been in that community for 5 years. So they had been there for quite some time, but people hadn't known how to use them and hadn't known how to turn them on.
How did they arrive there in the first place?
I think they were donated, was the understanding I got from that.
So someone donated the products, but not the training? And that was the missing link.
That was the missing link, yes. So by having this participant come in, I think that they were also broken and he was able to fix them. There was something small, but he fixed them, which was what he said his first task. And then, it really brought a lot of change for that community. And in a second example, also related to information and technology, there was a participant who went to Bamiyan province. And his story was quite interesting because he was not from Bamiyan province. He had never been there. But Bamiyan,
where is that?
It's west of Kabul, a few provinces, sort of in the center area. And the Bamiyan province has the only female governor in Afghanistan, so the only female provincial leader. And she actually came to the Netherlands a few years ago and spoke to the diaspora and said, we need help. We really need help. If you could come to Bamiyan province, please do.
Was that part of the IS Academy or was that something?
No, that was separate, completely separate from the project. And he was really motivated when he heard her speak, and he said, all right, I will go to Bamiyan province. He was an engineer working full-time in the Netherlands, and he quit his job to participate in this project and go to Bamiyan province. And he proceeded to, over the next 18 months, have three separate assignments back to Bamiyan province, where he worked for both the municipality and the university. And he created a master plan for both of them so that they could have a long-term plan and a long-term vision for how to build the city and how to build the university. In 2009, based on this plan, they built the first girls' dormitory in Bamiyan province, which allowed for the first time 20% of women from the rural areas to go to university. And previously that had not been an option for them because they cannot go to university if there is not an acceptable place for them to stay. So that has quite a lasting impact, I think. And secondly, what he did is that, there's a lot of talk now about virtual learning. However, in Afghanistan, virtual learning is generally not an option because the broadband is too slow. And when he was in the city in Bamiyan province, he found that it would actually be more cost efficient for the city and the university to work together to get a satellite internet connection. And in the end, they did this. They created a satellite internet connection that provides internet to both the city and the university because it's placed in one location. And based on that, he now conducts virtual learning from his home in the Netherlands. He teaches a course twice a week on engineering to Bamiyan province that's at a higher skill level than what they could get in Bamiyan province themselves for learning engineering. Okay. So this has quite, I think, a lasting impact on that city. And a final case that I can tell you about in terms of capacity building was also a case in Kabul. It was also related to engineering, where an engineer from the Netherlands came and taught a practical course on engineering. So typically you can go to Kabul University for an engineering degree, but there is no technical training on how to actually do the work for people who don't have a degree but work as more technicians. And a course was taught in the evenings so that people could come after work. And after the course, there were 60 participants. Every single participant was employed because it was such a needed course, and the course is now being continued to be taught by one of the top students. And also, as an example, one person who taught the course was a watchmaker before, and he earned $100 per month, and after the course he was able to make $800 per month by working as an engineering technician. So it also had quite an impact in being able to train people to have the proper skill sets to be able to do work as technical engineers.
Okay, so are these best practice or are they typical projects?
I think that they're a mix of best practices and typical projects. They make good examples as to the tangible impacts that people can make, but I think that all the participants actually also had very strong impacts. It's just that they're not necessarily as tangible. For instance, someone who's a manager at Kabul Municipality works on maybe 15 to 20 different projects and they have an impact on all of them, but it's not necessarily as concrete as the one example of like the engineering course.
Okay, so what are your recommendations? And if they're picked up by the Dutch and Afghan governments, how would they improve the situation for training and jobs over the next 5, say 10 years?
The recommendations from this report was that the project would continue because I think that the project is having a good impact right now in Afghanistan. The second recommendation is that the project is right now 3 months and that it needs to be longer assignments duration, so people should be able to have the right duration of the assignment to fit the need of the project, whether that's 6 months or 12 months. Other recommendations were that also that the project allows for people to repeatedly continue to go on the project so that people, you know, if they go once and then if they go twice, but then that time that they're back in the Netherlands, they're often able to prepare further for their project. If the project is continued, I think that it will have a good impact in Afghanistan. It's a small project, though. They've only had a total of 60 people go to Afghanistan. So we're not talking large scale. We're talking, you know, it's quite small scale. But I think that one of the participants said it very well when they said, you know, with a small effort, you can make a lot of impact in Afghanistan. So I think that if it's continued over the next 5 to 10 years, there will be small impacts made in the certain areas that they are working. I don't think it's going to make massive change for the country, but I think it is still a positive contribution.
But if it has the multiplying effect, for example, you said, you know, one trainer trains, you know, a dozen teachers who then are able to, you know, improve the lives of hundreds of students, then that's the main thing.
That's definitely the main thing, is the multiplier effect. And it's hard for us to quantify how large that effect can actually be, but I do think that the people who are going are very motivated, they're making a very positive contribution, and I think that that's a very positive thing to continue.
Thank you very much, Katie.